This week on Retronauts, beefy shirtless guys shooting each other with big guns in the tropics? Well, sounds pretty gay. Welcome to Retronauts. I am this week's host, Nadia Oxford. I also double as the co-host of the Acts of the Blood God RPG. Hello, everybody. I'm joined by two very good friends of mine to tackle a very good, albeit very complicated and sticky in many ways, topic. And that is LGBTQ queer rep in video games, past, present, future. It's a very rough, bumpy topic full of people failing hard and also trying their best. So we're going to look at this and we're going to look and say, what's good? What's bad? What's cringe, as the wizened children of this era are wont to say. We'll do our very best to talk about it as respectfully and as well-informed as possible. We beg your pardons for any slip-ups. Feel free to hit me with things on Twitter at Nadia Oxford. I will take the slings and arrows and I will try to do better if there is a problem. But first, I want to introduce my guests. I brought with me Len, who has featured on Acts of the Blood God many times. So say hi, Len.
Hello, hello.
And I also want to say hi to my very good pal, Larch. Say hi, Larch.
Hello. Am I on TV?
You're on the part of TV that has the voice, but not the picture, not the devil, not the soul stealing part, just the voice stealing part. So why don't we just kind of start off by breaking the ice? We can just kind of go around, introduce ourselves, talk a little bit about our sexuality. If we feel comfortable, just kind of reveal what you feel comfortable talking about. I'll go ahead and start. I don't know. I said on Twitter that lately, the older I get, I feel like my brain is a Splatoon game where the Inklings are shooting hormones everywhere and just nothing is well balanced. Nothing is where it was. Nothing is what it will be. I feel like I'm changing all the time. But I guess the safest thing to say is that probably bisexual. I still feel comfortable with calling myself a cis woman, though, although there is some weird variants of that I'll get into eventually. But that's pretty much where I stand. All things subject to change, as things are in this life, because life has changed, how it differs from the rocks. Larch, why don't you go ahead and share show and tell?
Sure. I'm Larch. I am a trans woman, trans lesbian. I have been transitioning about a year thanks to Final Fantasy XIV, finally convincing me that my what I thought was like a growing feminine side is not just a side. I am all feminine side.
All right.
I will tell that story later if I get a chance. Other than that, kind of my only credentials for being here are a lifelong gamer who's also a trans lady. My day job, software, but nothing to do with the games industry. I guess my biggest credential for this crowd is having some stuff up on Overclocked, but
which I knew it. Like I listened to that, by the way, like,
oh really?
I swear to God, like, not all of them, but I knew a couple of your songs, so that's hilarious. Oh, amazing. To me,
I've also heard them like scroll by on AGDQ. That's pretty that's pretty awesome when they come up.
That's awesome. Everybody use the music. It's pretty great. How about you, Len?
Yeah, I am Len Hafer. I am, if we start with the personal stuff, I would describe myself as a gender fluid, non-binary trans. I use she, they pronouns. Gender fluid, non-binary, trans feminine, I guess, would be the labels are weird.
They are, aren't they? Like, I find like nothing against the younger generation. They have a lot of struggles and I'm proud of the work they're doing, but I feel like they're more into the label part than the older community is. I just, like I said, I have no idea what I am. It's like, okay, if I have to call myself something, there you go. But yeah, that's kind of where I am too.
I think when you're younger, maybe like it feels more important to have like a word as a locus to orbit around. And as you get older, identity can kind of just be vibes and that's okay. My sexuality, I would need like a thesis to explain it. Like I'm mostly heterosexual, but also mostly homoromantic, which is great because it means I can never have someone who's like my main SO that's also going to be able to. It's
that's
weird
fun
stuff. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, it's an interesting stuff. But as far as professional, I have been a freelance game journalist, mainly strategy and RPGs for about the last 10 years. I do a podcast called Three Moves Ahead about strategy games. As Nadia said, I've been on Axe the Blood God a fair few times talking about RPGs. So, yeah, I kind of designed my whole life and career around games because I don't know how I would have gotten by in any other industry.
I'm in the same boat, so don't worry. We both have equal sins. Mm-hmm. But
I should have said when I was introducing myself that I have never been on a podcast before, Blood God or otherwise. So
This
is going to be fun.
Oh, doing great so far.
Welcome to the wonderful world of podcasting.
I've listened to podcasts. I know enough to like know the structure, but yeah, this is fun.
Since we're all like terminally into games, why don't we talk about where we started? Like, I started with the Atari, which I talked about before, actually, ColecoVision, if you want to get pedantic about it. But I really started getting into games with the NES and the SNES. Something I'm sure we're all going to get into in a minute is the RPGs of the SNES were kind of life-changing in that they had these incredible stories and characters that I really identified with. And what about you two? Or would you say you're kind of echo me or?
Not really. I mean, I think I started a little bit younger, but also my parents were very against having any machine that could not be used to like do serious homework. Yes. No SNES, no NES. They finally came and bought me a 64.
Good.
Yeah. So I didn't miss out on Ocarina of Time at least.
That's good.
Yeah, Link. That's
ooh. Link was an awakening. Let's just say that.
Yes, Link's awakening.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, actually.
But I did get into the SNES RPGs because someone introduced me to the wonderful world of emulators. So,
oh boy.
Even before I got real consoles, I like experienced very janky emulated versions of Final Fantasy IV and Final Fantasy VI.
Final Fantasy IV's emulation. We go into the Mist Cave and they didn't have transparency.
Yeah, I had to ask my friend what to do and he's like, you just go through the cave and I'm like, I can't see anything. And Final Fantasy VI, I should mention that like it struck so much of a chord with me. The opera scene, the suicide scene, that like Celis was almost my name. That was like kind of the runner up.
Awesome.
That would have been a great name. Yeah. But I mean, Larch is great too. I like the name Larch.
Thank you. What about you, Liana?
Yeah. Actually that's very similar, actually, in some respects to my story, because I also had those parents that didn't want to buy a machine that was just for video games. And that's why I became primarily a PC gamer. I got my first PC when I was, I think it was like 1995-ish. So it was like, you know, the big stuff was like at that time was like Doom and Warcraft 2.
Oh, yeah.
But I did play like NES and SNES and Genesis when I would go over to my friends' houses or my aunt and uncle's house, who are a little bit more permissive about it. And then very similar to you, Larch, they did finally break down. And we got an N64 for Christmas in 2000. So it was
I got mine.
2 or 3 years of begging and they finally got it for us. So yeah, I was big into Ocarina. Also played emulated FF6, but like the BioWare RPGs were really big and formative for me. Baldur's Gate and eventually Knights of the Old Republic, and then you know the Dragon Ages and into the Mass Effects and all that.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I'd actually say is that the older games, not really so much in the way of good rep, like we'll talk about a few later, but Len, you coming from a PC background, that's actually quite a bit different because the PC fan base at the time, gamer base, was a little more mature, to be honest, than us console trash, like just making Mario Jump, whatever we were up to at the time. When did you start to notice that PC games were a little more inclusive of maybe people who weren't strictly cishet?
You know, it's interesting that you say that because I feel like a lot of, especially like competitive PC communities initially weren't. I mean, like the hardcore strategy games and like hardcore FPS and stuff, it was really kind of a boys club for a long time. And it sort of started to flip. I'm trying to think when I would identify it as, I think it's just really when a lot of those hardcore competitive players, like a lot of them realize they were girls, and I can't remember exactly. But that's something that you've seen happen in esports and happen, in like speed running and stuff, especially within the last 10 years.
Yeah, the trans awakening of the speedrunning community has really fascinated me.
Right. Yeah. For some reason, that's just something that
that's interesting.
Drawn to.
Like, that's yeah. It's not just about like games that have trans rep, but also games that have helped us shape our own identities. So, do you know, like, yeah. I follow speedrunning kind of loosely. Do you know what it is about? Is it just the community that's so supportive and people say, hey, maybe, you know, I'm not who I thought I was initially? Or is it just something about speedrunning that gets you riled up to realize, hey, I'm someone else? I don't know.
Yeah, that could be a topic of its own episode, really.
Yeah, seriously.
I'd love to hear someone with like a PhD in sociology tackle that question, because
there really seems to be a chicken and the egg problem. And to a certain extent, there is something about it being such an accepting community, and is like famously like very accepting. I think that they were really kind of leading the charge with putting pronouns everywhere.
Yeah, they're always like at the front of the charge for that, for sure. So I think maybe it is just a more, it could be community, because of course supportive community is everything if you are coming out in any regard. Like, speaking for myself, thankfully my family was pretty liberal about that kind of thing. They were just like, whatever, sex is weird, we don't care if you're gay or straight or whatever you want to be, we'll support you. And I'm very lucky about that. But I know it could be even that someone who is trans and they never had a community or support until they found one online with, say, speedrunning or anything else. But speedrunning seems to be prominent, as you said.
Hi, from a Catholic family, so.
Oh, dear.
Yeah,
that's why I cracked in my 30s.
I grew up in the what is referred to as the Evangelical Vatican, Colorado Springs, Colorado. So,
oh no!
Yeah, my parents are cool now, though. They've
got. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
They left for a reason. So like, if I was gonna posit a theory, like, here's just my random theory: is that the PC gaming community has always been about this sort of like free spirited, like, we mod the hell out of everything, we rip our computers apart, and like, put cool lights in them, and we we mod our games to hell and back. We make entire genres out of whole cloth just by modding games that already exist, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe it was that sort of thing. I mean, and speedrunning also requires this like very out of the box sort of experimental
Right.
Thinking that, like, if you're the type of person who thinks that way, maybe you're the type of person who's more open to reconsidering aspects of your identity that would go unexamined otherwise. Yeah.
That's but you're saying I don't even need to be on HRT. I could have just gone to the Nexus mods.
Yeah. You can download as many genders as you want. I have over 800 genders installed on my copy of Witcher 3. Yeah. So.
Watch the load order on that, though.
Yeah, you do want to be careful. Yeah, you don't want to get a crash to desktop from too much gender.
Too many genders. Blue screen. Yeah. Pops up with this frowny face. Too many genders.
Yeah.
Another thing to bring up about PC games also is, I feel like from my angle, Bethesda and BioWare were probably amongst the first like really commercial games to give you a lot of options for marrying gay werewolves and whatnot, which I'm totally pro marrying gay werewolves.
Yeah, I think that was really huge. I didn't realize the significance at the time. The fact that like my Bethesda playthroughs were always a woman who married another woman. What's that about? I do think that there's a little bit of, I don't think BioWare is as good about that, and I will pick on them later. Talk about cringe things. But I also think that there's a little bit of a problem with the attitude that has persisted into games with marriageable NPCs where they'll just say, oh, we'll just let anybody marry anybody.
Yeah.
And it's like, to a certain extent, that's great. To another extent, like, come on, give us queer something that like the straights don't have.
Yeah, no, for sure. That is one thing, like, we'll talk about what needs to be improved upon in the future. And I would much rather have that option than none at all. But I also understand not everybody's bisexual, like, and ready to get down at any minute of the day. I actually have to give a shout out to Hades, which kind of tackled that.
Yes,
number one,
Hades.
Hades did not restrict you to one partner. You could go with that whoever you want. I mean, you're a god. Why are you going to restrict? That's what gods did. They were really great. Yeah, they were really big on you know, monogamy.
I mean, that's what like Greeks did in general, right?
Yeah, yeah. And also Dusa, like, you could quote unquote romance her.
Oh my god, I love Dusa.
She was like
amazing. Yeah,
I had a Stardew Valley playthrough where like my character, actually both Stardew Valley and Dragon Quest Builders 2, my character was modeled after Dusa.
So good.
Like, having green hair to make her.
Yes. Can I just drop an RPG hot take that Dragon Quest Builders 2 is the best Dragon Quest?
Yes,
no questions.
Hello?
I'm not taking any questions.
No, you don't need to take any questions. I am here every day waking up saying, where's my Dragon Quest Builders 3?
Because I'm telling you. Oh my god.
Because, I mean, there's a pretty gay game for you. Like, oh, it's gay and fun. Yeah. That's all you can ask out of a game. But who is it in that game? Marloth? Oh, so great. So great.
I'd be straight for him.
He's so Vegeta. He's so adorable.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But no, it's a great game. And you can kind of romance. You don't really romance anyone in that game, but you do like form bonds with people.
Yeah.
Boy, girl, doesn't matter. Which is great because I love it when Dragon Quest is gay, because Sugiyama, like, was just the composer of Dragon Quest.
Oh my
extremely
god.
Extremely anti-LGBTQ. Yeah, so haha, I married Silvando, deal with it. I mean, who else would I marry? But this actually segues into a point I wanted to mention earlier about how I consider myself a cis female woman, but I never, ever, 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 if I have the option, I never play woman in games. I always take the male character. And that's not to say I have a problem with, like, say, oh, I have to play Lara Croft. Sure, that's no problem at all. But something about, I even made an alt on FF14 who was a female character, and I fantasied her back to a male. I don't know what it is. I just, I mean, the main point I'm trying to make whenever I talk about something like this is that human psychology is so effing messed up. There's just no binaries. How could there be? The brain is such a mess. So there's something in me, I suppose, that it's like, well, maybe I want to try being a guy. Maybe, temporarily see how it is. And it's not like I pine for that experience once I turn off the game, but it's just something that I like doing. I love my male warrior of light. I love writing about everyone he sleeps with because he does.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I obviously had like the opposite thing happen, which I think is a pretty common trans femme story.
Where yes.
I just realized I had a lot more fun with every game that let me play as a female character.
Yep.
If I chose the female character. Started in World of Warcraft, and it was really funny because I had my pretty girl elf that I only played on my own, and none of my friends knew about her. Like my bro paladin that I would play, it was like playing with people I actually knew. It was like
I am
beard.
Very straight.
Oh my god, such
my
egg.
Beard character basically. Yeah,
oh, so. And a beard.
Yeah, so yeah, it was pretty funny. And then obviously, yeah, when FF14 came out, I mean that. I'm sure we'll talk more about it, but that did more to probably did more to crack me than any other video game.
Yeah, we could actually get into that because by God, like Final Fantasy 14 has unraveled so many trans femmes that I know.
I know
so many. It's because like just for the, I mean, we're all FF14 stickos here. Unfortunately, apologies ahead of time to anyone who hates hearing about. Blah, blah, meme, free trial, heaven's word, whatever. But the point is, this is a game that Gabe Newell said it himself. You could be anyone. You could be anything. Meta doesn't know what it's doing. Meta is Final Fantasy 14 sex over in Linsa Malinsa. It's not shopping online. But it's not only gender you can kind of play with a bit in Final Fantasy 14. It's also body shape and body type. Because like going from like a Lala to a Ro to cat, because of course I went to cat.
Everyone goes to cat. Not me, I'm Ellison, but
my main is just a Midlander. I'm kind of basic like that, but
Mike is like that.
I do have a character of every race now, I think.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Do you play them all? I have an alt that I never pay attention to.
I only play my main character content wise. The other ones are mostly for RP purposes.
Oh, cool.
I basically pay Yoshi, you know, $10 a month or whatever for a 3D avatar chat room. I don't really do content anymore. So
it really is like, it is VR chat, isn't it? Just like fancier avatars. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll do content to get glams so I can look pretty well.
That's the real end game.
Yeah. So.
That and fishing.
Yeah.
I think like the glams like do hit an important point because like,
yes,
I think so many fantasy MMOs, like the glams are like different kinds of fantasy armor or robes or whatever. And Final Fantasy 14, like one of my go-to glams now is like crop shorts and like that like infamous top from the latest Moonfire celebration that was on the Rain nightclub billboard, like the open, like with like a bikini and like a drape.
Yeah.
And like, that's like not something you find in every RPG. And I think like that kind of realism and reflection of like what you might see in the real world, like means a lot of people can like kind of model themselves.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's definitely an aspect of why I think Final Fantasy appeals to queer people, because you can have knights in like ridiculously huge armor, but then they also have this like trans-Pacific LA to Tokyo fast fashion aspect of their visual milieu that is it just coexists alongside like wizard robes and stuff. So
it's so good. There's nowhere like Limsa.
Oh god, no. There's actually I can't remember which quest it was quite recent, but it was to do with guiding a cat boy to the sands, the quicksands, which is an infamous RP spot. And I think they knew it. And they just said, hey, players, let's bring the cat boy to the sex pot. One thing I wrote about Final Fantasy XIV, I think it was very recent. When I first started playing, I was surprised at how sexually open it was. Like, it's not Final Fantasy is a series that tends to be very pretty, very doesn't really talk about farts or what have you. But in Final Fantasy XIV, I'm like, oh hey, this guy's telling me not to sleep with this woman because they have chlamydia. That's not something I've seen in an RPG before, nor have I ever seen the term dip the wick until I played this game. So it was always very open about sex in a way that a lot of games aren't. And I think that's important because it also gives people more of an opportunity to express themselves comfortably. And you guys were talking about glamour just a minute ago. And now I haven't played many other MMORPGs for comparison, but I feel like glamour is such an important part of FF14, like no other RPG out there. And being able to switch your clothes to even like, just like, hey, I'm a big beefy paladin to, hey, I'm a casual catboy, meow, meow, on the fly for RP purposes and whatnot. Do either of you know if other MMORPGs have an RP community the way that FF14 does?
I mean, I played... in fact, like what got my partner and I together was Elder Scrolls Online. And that has like, you can make some like sexy glamours, but you couldn't really make like kind of the modern glamours that you get in Final Fantasy XIV. And I think they did add a Fantasia system. I think you could pay to change your race. And there were some infamous RP spots, like the inn in, I think, Riften was, you know, infamous for, you know, don't go there unless you want shout chat like- sex.
But like Balmung.
It was pretty much Balmung. Yeah.
Old Shire in World of Warcraft is the equivalent. Yeah.
TSO was interesting for that because there were no servers, right? Like, they had the serverless architecture. So, like, just the infamy was like the location, kind of like quicksands, and not there was no Balmung equivalent.
Right. That's hilarious that Riften would be a sex spot.
Right? I mean, it actually would be, right?
It is the place that was run by like the Dommy Mommy lady in Skyrim, wasn't it?
That's true.
Yeah, so.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, I've been involved in the World of Warcraft RP scene basically from day one, like 2004, And I do play on Moonguard, which is like the infamous RP server. And it has gotten so much gayer over the years.
Oh, I bet.
And they're kind of trying. They're trying to be like more like FF14. They're actually launching a feature like next month that's basically just you log in every month and you get more cosmetic rewards. But I mean RP is huge. I've done text RP going back to like AOL Instant Messenger days. Now it's mostly on Discord. And that's always been a huge way to express myself. I mean, tabletop RPGs have always been a huge way.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah, so.
Although I have to say that I was never that comfortable playing a woman in a tabletop RPG. Just like the pressure to both get it right and also like what it reveals about me to the table was just too much. So I would play like, I think the last D&D campaign I had, I was like a dragonborn bard with like a huge soft spot.
So, yeah, see, I mostly am in like the DM or game master chair. So I think that really helped me because it's like, okay, well, there's going to be a lot of female NPCs in the setting. And I have like the plausible deniability of like, this isn't a self-insert character. It's just, this cool assassin lady that you met that you're going to do a quest for. But like my friend that I have been playing tabletop games with longer than anyone, when I came out to him, he was like, yeah, I kind of suspected. And it was that it was that exact female assassin NPC that he cited as why.
That's interesting.
Like, I don't know. The female characters you come up with are always just like way more well-rounded and interesting. Mm. And you have more fun playing them. So,
I can relate. Yeah.
That's what my partner said about my warrior. Like, when I came out, she was like, I can like really tell that you've been like really playing with femininity. Like your warrior like does not just seem like someone sexy to look at while you play this game.
No, I've seen you have like you're a Ro, right? A Femro?
She's a Femro.
She's a Femro. That's right.
I'm an Ellison.
Right. Right. I met you guys. That was great.
Yeah.
I need to come back and visit again.
You need to come back and get my partner through Eden.
Oh, Goth Town. Talking about gay. You know, let's shift to that for a second. We have a quest in Final Fantasy 18. 18? What 14. The hell is wrong with me? Final Fantasy
14. I wish we had Final Fantasy 18. Get from the future. Square.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm thinking in boxes today. So we have Final Fantasy 14, a quest where Gaia and Rhine, is it? I can never remember her name. But
Rhine or Reen? I forget how they say it.
I think it's Rhine. But the point is, they're extremely gay. It's very unsubtle. Like,
they are such lesbians.
They actually use the Final Fantasy VIII ending scene with like Riona and Squall. You know, with the flowers kind of blowing.
Right.
That was exactly emulated for the scene. So it's like, okay, yeah, they're in love. Also, the crystal is rainbow now. Also, Uriange and Thancred are now gay dads. It was pretty funny.
They've got to be.
No, they absolutely are. Like in one of the patches, I think Thancred says he's mad that his quote unquote travel partner was taken away because we borrowed him for some reason.
Oh my God,
other.
You're right.
Yeah. So that
I forgot that was like really kind of canonical and not just everyone shipping them.
Yeah. See, that's always the important thing, is that like what's canonical and what's just people shipping and making their own decisions. Like, okay, they are gay. Well, no, they're not. The game hasn't said for sure or not. But it kind of comes down to what I call my preferred version of representation, which is do it now and ask forgiveness never.
Yes.
Which is, I don't know if any of you are Power Rangers fans.
I watched it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I watched up till the end of the Zordon saga, then I kind of fell off.
The
new Ranger for the win.
Yes. I've always kind of kept abreast of it because my husband's always been a low key fan. So I've always just watched it. And this season, Dino Fury? Yeah, it's Dino Fury. The Green Ranger is gay. And I don't mean they made a very special episode out of it. I mean, just one episode. Hey, here's her girlfriend. Let's talk about some silly relationship thing. Oh, I'm going to kiss you goodbye. The end. There was no like, very special episode. Look at this. She's gay. It just wasn't talked about. It was like, here's a person who has a gay relationship the same way you other Rangers have straight relationships. It's just normal.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I really feel like it's super important that, like, the most interesting thing about your gay character cannot be that they are gay.
Yeah.
Or cannot be that your trans character is trans. You know, otherwise they are just completely tokenizing.
No, I've always said, like, my dream for, like, a better world would be that you could tell somebody that you're gay or trans or bi or whatever, and they would just be like, okay, I don't care. Like, that should be.
I have to admit, like, when people tell me what gender they are, whatever, I don't care. I don't mean that to be, like, cold.
Right,
of course I care. Of course I care to the point. I know your struggles. I understand. I want to support you.
Yeah.
But
it means
it's like, oh, cool. Where are we going for supper? That's.
Yeah, that was pretty much how all my siblings reacted when I told them. Like, oh, cool. And then we just keep on trash talking, whatever.
That's right. No matter what gender you are, you can still talk. You can still talk shit. There's no limitations.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's my I think more shows and whatnot need to do that. Now, you don't see, though, like, newspapers and sites and idiots on Twitter being like, oh, they wokeified Power Rangers. They did this, doesn't that, because they just did it. They didn't make a big thing out of it. And it's not like Disney saying, hey, we have a gay cat. I don't know what was going on with Buzz Year, but everyone was losing their minds over some minor thing. I mean, Disney representation is a joke. It's nothing. It's
seriously
live. What is it? Live slug reaction. The meme. It's just for 2 seconds, you see something and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be implemented within the narrative, within the characters. You can have a gay relationship as easily as you can have a cis relationship. It just needs to be something that's normalized in media, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's the related issue of queer baiting, which continues to happen, where, you know, they'll put it there, but they won't say it. And, like, they want us to support it, but also they don't want to make it explicit.
With the caveat, I think that, you know, it's important to think about the author when you, like, lay accusations of queer baiting.
Of course.
When Madeline was revealed as trans, like, I saw a lot of accusations that the writer was queer baiting, and, like, she was working through her shit when she wrote that game.
Yeah. Right. No, I think Madeline's great representation. She's very
definitely like, the fact that so many, like, character, that so many trans women on Twitter were saying, I fucking knew it when she
exactly,
like, when the reveal happened, like, she is trans in a way that is identifiable without even being revealed.
Yeah, for sure. And off the topic, shout out to Celeste for, I said this on BlogGov, I just have to say it still, is the fact that they use Canadian spelling exclusively in that game. It's the only game
that I played
Canadian spelling. I'm like, oh, God bless you. I'm not allowed to use Canadian spelling anymore. Everyone wants me to write in American or British. So, dear me.
You don't even get the spell check option.
No, it drives me up the wall.
I know.
Oh, Canadian anger. As for queer baiting, yes, that is, I feel like maybe that thankfully that's becoming less of a thing as we get more accepting into representation. Not to say it's never not going to be a thing. I know it's a huge issue because there's still, like, media consumption is very globalized, and not every country has the standards that other countries have. So someone, like, might resort to queer baiting if, like, say they want their characters to be gay in America, but not in China. You know what I mean? Like, it is very frustrating. It can be very frustrating, but I remember it being a very, very big problem, very, very big topic of discussion with Voltron, which I never really watched. But man, people were mad about Voltron. Did either of you watch it? I just never really got into it.
The new one? I haven't seen any of the new one.
Because, yeah, I think some of the boy characters were being queer baited. I don't really know. I know the fandom was a little bit.
When you mention Disney, I think the most egregious example recently was Captain Marvel, where it's like, so clear that like these characters are girlfriends, but you're not going to say it.
Oh my God.
Too much of a coward to say it. They're raising a young girl together, but you're not going to say that they're romantically involved. Yeah. So
no, that's frustrating. Yeah.
Come on. Give us Guy and Ryan and Disney. Give us Eden. Before we get off the subject of Final Fantasy XIV, can I like tell you both how I cracked my egg? Because like I think it's a great story for this
please
podcast.
Do.
So my partner and I, both playing women, got married.
Yes,
I remember that. As both of you know, when you get married, you get the teleportation ring. So you can teleport to your partner like once, I think every half hour. And whenever she did that, she would say, "I'm teleporting to my wife." And I'm like, oh shit, what just happened? Am I really feeling what I think I am? And like I'd already been kind of like on Twitter being like, I'm really jealous of this trans woman living her best life, and like that's nothing, right? So like when that happened, I'm like, oh shit, this is something. And like it only took a couple weeks for me to
I do remember that you guys had the wedding, and then like very quickly afterwards, remember you coming out, and I was like, something must have triggered at the wedding.
Yeah,
to be honest. Because,
I mean, it wasn't the wedding like per se. Like I remember thinking it was awesome that for like two women getting married, but it was after that when she started like, sorry, partner, if this is too much information, but she started like outside of the game calling me her boyfriend wife. And when that happened, I'm like, oh my God. Okay. And then like a good friend of ours, you know, Nadia, also came out as a trans woman, and like her wife started like gushing about how much happier she was, like, and like just all this stuff just stacked up. But yeah, it was that Final Fantasy 14 ring and wedding and teleportation, and yeah, just being able to be yourself in a game and watching that leak out, I think was really instrumental.
Yeah.
Well, my name, even Leanna, was my FF14 character's name before it was my name.
Oh, like, nice.
People in the RP community knew me that as that name before the rest of the world.
Oh, amazing.
By that name. And, you know, when I was still very deep in the closet, I was like, man, I'm really going to have to explain to them someday, you know, who I am outside of this. And it turned out that I ended up having to explain Leanna to the rest of the world,
right? Not
the other way around, because that is who I actually was, which was,
Yeah, my name was too fantasy to adopt. I thought about it. I thought about adopting Lily as a nod to my white mage maining at the time.
I don't think I can get it. If I did ever come out as trans male, I couldn't get away with using my Warrior of Light name. I used like a mooncat name.
Yeah.
So he's Aslato Marshiel, which is just not going to fly on anybody's passport.
Yeah.
So I'd have to come up with something else, but
you gotta teach people the etiquette for like, yeah, you can't leave off the apostrophe. We're not that good of friends.
No, yet. I'm the second son. I am the second son. You can't take away my position. It's the only thing I have because of my mother's name. Please help me.
Come on, Leanna, big faux pas. That's like, you know, sun cat etiquette, not moon cat etiquette.
Oh yeah, I am getting those mixed up. You're right. Yeah.
Where did you get your name then, Larch?
So it's mostly just the fact that like the tree is like, you know, memories of beautiful places and representative of change. Like,
right.
You know, hidden beauty in like something mundane. But also I got used to using the name. It all has to come down to something geeky, right? I got used to using the name because I think it was in Let's Go, Pikachu.
Yes.
That I'm like, well, the professors are always named after trees. I'm aspiring to be a professor. I'll pick my favorite tree.
That's great.
And like, I just kept using that in like every Pokemon game since. And like, that just kind of became what I was used to. And when I started tracking, I'm like, this makes sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's really cool. Yeah. I usually name my male characters Gowan after the singer. I don't know why. I just can't stop.
The cool name. I like that.
That is a cool name.
Yeah.
I think it started with actually Persona 5 because you start off the game getting the crap beaten out of you in prison.
Oh.
And you have to sign your name. And I'm like, I'm a prisoner, criminal mind. So I named myself Gowan Sticks because Gowan did the song, Six covered it. And that was that.
So, that's a badass name.
I thought so too.
Funny enough, I was thinking about it, but yeah, FF14 was not actually the game that finally cracked my egg. It was Persona 5, and I remember this very distinctly. Because it's Makoto's awakening scene. I actually pulled up, you know, part of it, you know, have you decided to tread the path of strife?
Yes.
You finally found your own justice. Please never lose sight of it again. This memorable day marks your graduation from your false self. The first time I played through that, like, I cried my eyes out and didn't understand why. The second time I played through it, I cried my eyes out and did understand why. Where she stomps and, like, breaks the floor because she's just, like, so mad of that putting up with this lie.
Persona 5 has its problems, as people have talked about in the past. But I find the awakening scene so powerful. Like, I never skip them, no matter how many times I play the game. Just even, especially the first one, just that, you're right, that would be like a real powerful, like, cracking moment, especially Makoto's, because she goes with some shit in that game. Speaking of queer characters, I just kind of wanted to go over some that we have met in our travels as video game lovers and haters. Are either of you fans of Earthbound or Mother?
I have never played them. I never got into them. I know it's like such a shame for a retro gamer.
Yeah, same here, unfortunately.
Because I think the first example I can think of really seeing a good queer representation in a game, a retro game, was in Earthbound. There's a character named Jeff. He's the dude with the glasses. And he is kind of summoned by Ness to go and help them because they're stuck in some place, a grave, is the long story. And Jeff is in a boarding school called Winters, and the gates are closed. You're not supposed to be out. It's nighttime. And he has a friend named Tony who helps them get out. And they make it clear, and the creator of Earthbound even said that Tony is gay. He loves Jeff. That's why he helped him. And I just thought, oh, that's actually really sweet. And God, of course, you're in a boarding school. Of course you're gay. Like, it's just... you also have Mother 3, which is kind of the follow-up to Earthbound. Now, that's a very sticky one, because you have characters called the Magypsies, and they are...
Oh.
I don't know how you describe them. Gods, goddesses. They are definitely gender neutral and extremely... how do I describe them? But flamboyant, I suppose. Like, they flaunt who they're kind of... How would I want to describe this? That sound like a total douche, but just like they're very very stereotypical. Let's just say that, like, some of the representations of women in drag. And it's I think it was said not too long ago, that's probably the reason why Mother 3 never got a localization, because Nintendo was just like, we ain't touching this. No sirree, Bob.
Oh, damn it, Nintendo.
But from my angle, this is an opinion I've held on to for a long time. The Magypsies, even though they're represented the way they are, nobody makes fun of them for being who they are. Nobody says, oh, look at this weird man. Oh, wow. Dude. Look, no, they are just gods who happen to not have any real concept of gender, because why would they? So, of course, if I was a god and I had like an avatar as a human, I'd be like, oh, cool. Let's dress up in drag. Why the hell not? This is fun. So I don't know. I'm sure other people's opinions vary, but I always thought they were definitely more positive representation than negative representation, because people respected the hell out of them no matter how they presented themselves.
Right.
So that's just my argument. But again, it might not be the most soundproof argument in there, but neither of you have played Mother 3, right? So,
yeah, I mean, I kind of have a pet peeve. I was going to talk about this later when we talk about cringe stuff, but I might bring it up now because I kind of have a pet peeve with representation of gender neutral or non-binary or gender fluid characters where they have an in-world lore reason for being non-binary.
Ah.
Like, this seems to be a trope. Like, the go-to example for me is the Asari in Mass Effect.
Oh, I've heard them come up a lot.
yeah, because they are, like, you know, femme presenting. They are technically, you know, gender neutral. They're the only characters that, like, both genders of protagonists can romance. Right. So, like, they're bisexual, but in a way that is, quote, approved.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just have the courage to make a non-binary character. Like, don't hide it in this lore. And, like, I even messed this up in a Dungeon World game that I played a few years ago, I was a non-binary elf, and they had this whole backstory where they were like in a like wizard caste who like looked at the stars and stuff. You know, they're kind of astrologers. And like my whole backstory was like when they joined this wizard caste, they like had to shed their gender identity, and like they like wanted to do this because it was an opportunity to shed their gender. And like, don't do that. Just make them who they are. Don't like, you don't have to couch it in this in-world reason.
Right. Right. No, I totally know what you're saying here, but I don't think Mother 3 had anything like that. It's not like they were just, you know, gender neutral or whatever they were, and happened to be powerful because that's just who they were.
Right. But like, you're still kind of dehumanizing them. You're saying like these gender neutral people are also gods.
Right. Okay. I see. Yeah, for sure. That's actually an interesting perspective. I never even thought of that.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Like they're, it's like, oh, they have to be a magical creature if they're going to be a non-binary character versus just having a human character who is non-binary, which would be a
of course.
Thing.
Yeah. Like we were talking about earlier with the Green Ranger, it's just, well, she's a person. She happens to be gay. Her relationships are the same thing as the, you know, the heterosexual Power Rangers. You know, oh no, there's prom drama. Well, same thing with the Green Ranger. She just happens to have gay prom drama, you know?
Yeah. Well, there is sort of like an interesting, if you look at Japanese versus Western games, I think that they both have like their strengths and weaknesses when it comes to sort of portrayals of gender, because, you know, in Japan, there's sort of more of a baseline acceptance of like some level of gender fluidity, if not necessarily like sexuality. You know, if we get to talking about Link at some point, you know, I think
we should definitely talk about Link.
Yeah.
Link is like an honorary non-binary character. He's like a he, them, femme boy or something. Like
I'm running around in a skirt.
Like, yeah, I always liked playing as Link because he's, you know, he's kind of masculine, but he's also really pretty. And that appeals to me. So,
yeah. I had a bit of an awakening when I was young. And,
a Link's Awakening?
I did it again, didn't I?
Oh, no.
I don't know. Did either of you, growing up, watch the Deke cartoon for Zelda and Super Mario Brothers? And
no. I've seen it. I didn't watch it when I was a kid, but I have seen it.
Because there's the Legend of Zelda series where, in the first episode, Link is attacked by moblins when he's in bed. So he's fighting in a very short nightshirt. And I'm just like, you know what?
No.
I can deal with this.
Yeah. and like, you know, I would go on to like study, you know, Japanese literature and like the Tale of Genji and like where that kind of idea of the androgynous mask hero comes from, which is interesting in and of itself. Whereas in the Western world, I feel like it was very much more driven by, you know, as a reaction against how sort of conservative we used to be about that stuff. A lot of game studios started being like, okay, we need to be proactive about getting all of all of these identities, their own representation in our games. Particularly you see this with stuff like BioWare. So it's two different approaches, and I think they both have problems and they both have aspects of them that are very cool and affirming.
No, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your point, and this kind of goes back to Link, about androgyny. Now, I find that when I was younger, and just speaking as one person myself, like when you talk about body stereotypes in cartoons and stuff, and you have these guys who complain, oh, well, you complain about double standards or impossible standards, but men had to live up to He-Man. And I never, ever, ever thought big, muscly dudes like He-Man were ever cool or hot or interesting.
No.
I always wanted someone, to be frank with you, like the way Yoshitaka Amano drew men, like David Bowie men, basically. Those were the guys I was after, e.g. Link. And I feel like a lot of, you know, women and like other people were like that as well. Just not really into the, I'm not saying nobody's into the muscly dudes, of course they are. But yeah, something about the androgyny of characters in Japanese works really pleased me, for lack of a better, less frightful term. Like my first video game crush that I can recall was probably Vega from Street Fighter, because he was so pretty. And both of you probably remember until up till quite recently, men characters who were androgynous were usually given like some weird ass masculine features when they came west to kind of make them less pretty. Like even as far as even as recently as the after years, Final Fantasy IV, which I love because I'm a sicko. They took Cecil's son, Theodore, God help us all. And he had a very pretty face in the Japanese art. But they made him more manly in the American art. And it looked really weird. I mean,
I didn't know that.
Look it up sometime. But yeah, for sure. It's and also even like it was really bad going back to, say, the NES. And I've always been a huge, huge Breath of Fire fan. And growing up, I actually got a crush on Ryu because he was another pretty boy with blue hair. He's the Dragon Boy. How could I not be in love with him? And you look at the box art for the American versions of Breath of Fire 1 and 2, and they were literally drawn by some comic artist, I don't remember who, and they're not bad at all. They're very good, but they took these this pretty antagonist and made him into Conan the Barbarian, because God forbid he not be screaming and saliva coming out of his mouth for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know any of that. That's really interesting, and I need to like look up some examples now.
Yeah, I'm always very interested in, well, I mean, I work in localization, so I'm always interested in localization. But it was definitely, as you say, Larch, just the more androgynous look was always much more acceptable in Japan for a much longer time than it was in the West. I actually don't know anything about Genji, if you want to explain how that kind of became a thing.
Oh, yeah, it's like a really super old story, but he's sort of the prototypical androgynous male Japanese folk hero, sort of. It's been a long time. I've been out of college for too long. My bones hurt. he had sort of like a boyfriend who was a little bit more on the like gruff, muscly side.
Mm-hmm.
But he's sort of the origin point for why you see so many heroes in Japanese media that are more kind of like pretty and androgynous.
Interesting.
That's cool.
That story really kind of set the precedent. It's a huge part of the literary lexicon, and it set the precedent for, you know, you can be a badass while still being kind of a little bit effeminate or gender.
That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I like that. Do you, I know you do, Larch, but Len, you've played Xenoblade, right?
I have not played Xenoblade, unfortunately.
It is extremely gay.
I have admired
it. It's so gay.
I love Pyra in Smash Bros.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But yeah. I haven't played Xenoblade yet, unfortunately.
I feel like Xenoblade 2, like I had such a soft spot for it because like, you could just assemble all these different models of femininity and like,
yeah,
you know, even hearing, I forget what her name is, but like the like lady shouting cute and fierce all the time.
Oh, I love her. I use her all the
time. Yeah, right.
It was like cute and fierce. Always ready to go though. Like she just always has ready really to go, cute. Though.
Yeah.
Really cute voice. No, you're talking like, about.
For some reason, I always want you at my party.
Xenoblade Chronicles 2 got a lot of kickback, as I recall. Actually, I know very well because I was part of that kickback, and I'll be salty about it to the day I die, because Pyra had big tits, and God forbid. And this was a time when, I'm actually very glad to say, people were becoming more aware of stereotypes in games, of you know, harmful stereotypes and you know, bad character design. So I understand why Pyra came under attack and why Xenoblade Chronicles 2 came under attack, because the character designs were a little bit out there. Mm-hmm. But I never agreed with a lot of the criticism, because number one, I like Pyra. Like, okay, she has big boobs. I don't care.
Yeah, she's a character. A great character.
She's really neat. She has shorts. I don't give a damn. My standard, frankly, is I would love it if you could give me a woman who looks normal-ish and is cool in a video game. But if you have to give me like a woman who's kind of meek but regularly proportioned versus, say, a woman who's Bayonetta, I'm going to take Bayonetta. Yeah. Because I remember getting so angry about the new Tomb Raider and everyone was praising it and how, oh, look, Lara Croft is like proportional now. And she was having these death scenes that were just brutal. And I'm like, I can't watch this. This is brutalizing her.
That was really awkward.
That was not like, I understand what everyone was going for. Like I said, they were trying and I appreciate that, but it was just like men, dudes were telling me, Pyra is not good female representation. You can't call yourself a feminist if you'd like her. Look at over here. Look at Lara Croft dying. It's like, first of all, shut up. Don't tell me what to like.
Yeah.
Second of all, no. And what really like, kind of just
trying to mansplain representation to a woman.
Please. Please. And it made me especially sad was Xenoblade Chronicles 2 because, Larch, as you know, there's some really interesting queer rep in there. Like,
yeah.
And it all subscribes to the do it now, don't ask for forgiveness formula. One of them being, two of them actually being Bridget and Morag from Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which is just, you meet them and they're like, oh, I'm gonna kill your ex because you're doing bad things. And they are just already a couple. Like they work together. You can tell they love each other. And it's just like, oh, okay. They just happen to be a couple who can kick my ass like six ways on Sunday because they're just that awesome. And Xenoblade Chronicles is generally like 3 in particular is very good about showing people about having people show like physical affection. Like you see a scene in Xenoblade Chronicles 2 where Bridget is just kind of leaning against Morag and sleeping against her. It's just a very sweet little gesture.
I forgot that.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
And even the bad guys like Malos, who's an asshole, let's not mince words here. He's very much in love with Jin, who's the, who I love because basically, Tetsuya Nomura took Cecil from Final Fantasy IV and put a mask on him and said, there's your character. So, but like, he is clearly in love with Jin, who doesn't love him back because Jin has his own problems. But I just like the idea that, okay, here's a bad guy who, and he's not like a stereotypical flamboyant, I am very gay and evil. He's just a guy who loves this person he's working with, and it won't work because their paths diverge too much. And I just thought that was a really neat inclusion. And
And I think it's so important that as they humanize like the handlers and blades, like,
yeah,
of course, as they humanize the blades, like, of course, they like start getting feelings.
Yeah. You have not finished 3, have you?
I have finished 3.
I don't want to spoil much, but I will say, holy shit, polyamory. Like, this is a big, this game's pretty big on polyamory.
It's so poly.
And I interviewed Takahashi a long time ago for Xenoblade Chronicles 2. That was a really good interview. That was during Yom Kippur. I don't know how that happened. So that was fasting and just like asking him these questions over a staticky ass phone. But I really wish I could go back and interview him and say, look, I'm always impressed with how your games are pretty queer positive. And why is that? Why do you write about polyamory when nobody really touches the subject very much in video games? Like I said, only like Hades is the only game I think of that lets you do that.
Yeah, like for all the queer rep we get in video games, and I think this echoes a lot of the rep in other media. This echoes like a lot of the even conversation around queer issues. Like,
yeah.
But polyamory just doesn't get it as much as even gender stuff.
Yeah,
and certainly not as much as sexuality.
For sure. And speaking of Xenoblade Chronicles 3, again, I won't spoil much. I'll just say I saw that picture. You know the picture?
The picture, yes.
And I was just like, oh, Chad.
Yeah.
Chad. Did either of you play 13 Sentinels?
No. Also, no.
Sorry. Really? You have to explain all these games to us.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
No. I would say, like, you have got to play 13 Sentinels. It is so, so odd, but so good. It is probably my primary example of a game that tells a story as a game and doesn't try to be something else. And it works out really well for it. And, of course, the art is just freaking beautiful. I love VanillaWare's shit. Holy crap. Like I said on Twitter, I don't care how many floppy, stupid witch titties they draw. Just keep on drawing those dragons. Holy crap. Like one of my favorite games of all time is Dungeons and Dragons Shadows Over Mystara. And I'm going to butcher his name because I'm tired. But George Kamatami was on that team and he left to do like Dragon's Crown and stuff like that. Oh, I can't wait to see what Vanillaware has next. But there is a character, and this kind of segues into another point I want to make about improving representation in games in the future. There's a character named Tsukasa Okino. I'll just call him Okino. He is a non-binary character, or at least like he is someone who cross-dresses. He is someone who at the end of the game has a gay relationship where he actually says, "I love you" to his spouse.
Wow. And
that to me, that was like, oh my God, a gay man said, "I love you" to his spouse in a video game. Like, stop the presses. Because I realized, first of all, lesbian relationships, okay, go for it. No problem. We're all about that now. But gay man loving man relationships, people are still.
Feel like that always lags.
It lags a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely. This is another thing where I could like pull back from like obscure readings from my college history classes.
Oh, please
about
do.
Like, you know, the Western canon is full of like kind of like tacit, almost like don't ask, don't tell type approval of women relationships. But because of like how feudal succession worked and like, you know, preserving the legitimacy of the bloodline, like, you know, that it got to the point where it was like really unacceptable for, you know, we have like a lot of baggage about men on men relationships, particularly from like the 4th century, 5th century onward, God, something like that. Yeah. Oh, I mean, the Greeks were kind of okay with it. I think the Romans were maybe relatively okay with it compared to the people that came after them, but
how long like baggage like that can just persist.
Yeah, like you could be put to death for, you know, sodomy if you were a guy, whereas if it was two women, they were usually like, just don't do it in public.
Yeah, they got so, like a,
yeah.
I think Queen Victoria say that women don't have sex with other women, like women don't do that, and that's why she criminalized sodomy, but didn't really do anything about lesbians. That's just something I heard.
Yeah, so.
Queen Victoria.
And there's a reason trans women are so into like the witchy aesthetic. So
I am also a witch and a pagan and a trans femme. Oh, cool. So I'm very much into all of those things. So
it all works together well. Larch, you wrote something here that I think is very interesting. Final Fantasy VII, I think, had some problems with the original game because, you know, the Honeybee Inn was like, haha, gay men, whatever. The new Honeybee Inn sequence, though, in Final Fantasy VII Remake. Now, you said here, Larch isn't, sorry, Cloud is an egg, changed my mind.
Yeah, Larch isn't an egg anymore. I just wrote that to be snarky in your show notes.
I think it's funny, but you might be onto something.
But I think that, like, he's enjoying it.
Oh, yeah, in his own way.
He also just seems, like, highly depersonalized through most of that entire game. Especially the way he's animated, like his face is animated in the remake. Yeah, I just, I want him to be able to wear a dress and have fun.
Oh.
He has a very kind of sad look in his eyes in the remake, doesn't he?
Yeah,
poor guy. I love Cloud. Like, I love him so much in the remake, too. They're just doing a good job with him, I think.
I can't wait till they get to the moment in the remake, but, like, I now think back to like one of the formative moments in my teenage years is like crying for like Little Days when Iris died.
Yeah.
And like she was the person that I identified with. And like when she died, I felt like I died.
I got so mad. I remember saying, I was so mad about it that I was like telling my friends, if Sephiroth was real, I would kill him. I don't care. I don't even care if I went to jail. I would actually murder him. That's how mad I was beside myself about it.
Murdering Sephiroth would be a bit of a problem. You have to reach him. He's kind of bored.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But that's interesting, like that people kind of latched on to Eris for that reason. I just kind of thought whatever about her. I like her more now. I'll be completely honest with you all. One of my favorite ships in the world is Cloud, Tifa, and Aerith. Like, how could it not be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
That's great. That's how it should be. That should be canon.
This should be canon. I think Square wants to make it canon. I think Square every so often makes you know subtle little jabs. Yeah. Like, of course, as Larch knows, both of you going to know this. I'm a huge Final Fantasy IV fan.
Mm-hmm.
And did either of you play World of Final Fantasy, the one where everyone had big heads?
I didn't.
No.
Yeah, but you know the game I'm talking about, right? Like, It was a weird RPG where you kind of stacked the characters. And it was actually a very interesting example of Square trying something new, but I don't think anybody really played it. People who played it loved it. But the point is, you meet a whole bunch of Final Fantasy characters and they're all chibi-fied and cute. And you kind of come across a storyline where it recreates from Final Fantasy IV the scene where Cecil has to get the desert pearl or whatever for Rosa, who has the fever, right?
Right.
But in World of Final Fantasy, he has to fight Yojimbo to get like some flower to cure the desert fever for his quote unquote dear one. He doesn't say who it is. And then when you fight Yojimbo, you win whatever, you get your flower, and Cecil says, "Oh, I can finally, you know, cure my dear one's fever." And you find out he's talking about Kane. He's not talking about Rosa.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah, because at one point Edgar was there, of course, like says yeah. like says to him, "Is your friend fair? Is there the one you care about? Are they fair?" And Cecil's just like, "What are you talking about?" But yeah, you do find out he's talking about Kane, and he's talking also about Rosa, who's taking care of Kane. And I'm just like the biggest stan for Rosa, Cecil, and Kane. So it's like, you know what, Square, thank you for that. I appreciate
that's awesome. I just Googled World of Final Fantasy and I immediately went, is this a Nomura game? Because this looks like a Nomura ass video game right here. Yeah.
I don't remember if he had anything to do with it.
Yeah, it says he's credited for character design. So yeah.
That'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other interesting thing that, I mean, this could also overlap with the cringe discussion a little bit, is I feel like Final Fantasy, I feel very conflicted about it because it has some very prominent sort of queer-coded villains.
Yes.
Which is an issue, you know, queer-coding your villains is like a thing that straight people have been doing for a long time.
For sure.
But also, like, Sephiroth is a really cool character and Kefka is a really cool character. Like, I kind of love them a little bit.
Would you say Kefka is queer quote that queer coded?
A little bit. I mean, he's like he's the jester, right? Like he's the fool arcana. He's like the great disruptor. Mm-hmm. So like he has like some gender transgressive undertones that may or may not be intentional.
Right. I guess I could see that. Like,
yeah,
the line like, "Ahem, there's sand on my boots."
Right, like he's
feels
kind
very
of
much like how
sometimes.
I started thinking
yeah.
when I started doing things that I like, which did not happen until this year.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And with Sephiroth, it might just be more that I'm brain poisoned by 20 years of people tripping Cloud and Sephiroth. But
people love to do that. That's yes. very popular.
Yeah, yeah. So that's something that's been around for a long time. Is these sort of like villains who are like meant to be socially transgressive, so they end up sort of taking on aspects of like, oh, I'm not following your rules. I'm not
right.
I don't believe in your gender or your hierarchy or whatever.
No, but. For sure. I think that's why I wanted to point out from Xenoblade Malos, because his whole thing is, yeah, I'm, well, he has his reason for doing all the crap he does, but he's not like, oh, I'm a flamboyant, look at me, gay. I'm gay to rebel against all of you. He's just gay and he's in love and it goes wrong for him.
There you go. Yeah.
And so, I think that would fall flat if it weren't already such a queer game, right? Like,
oh God, it's queer.
Your villain can be queer if like everybody else is queer.
Yeah.
There you
only
go.
Your villain's queer, then we have a problem.
Right.
That's
right.
A good point. Yeah. So just kind of talking a little bit more about what needs to be kind of worked on that developers want to maybe consider in the future. Larch, this is an interesting thing here. You wrote, don't hide your representation in side content. That's,
yeah.
I think, important.
Yeah. So like the example that I specifically put down there is the Horizon games. So I am a huge sucker for both Zero Dawn and Forbidden West. For some reason, I played Zero Dawn through like 100%ed it twice. I bounce off of most big open world games except for Breath of the Wild, again, Link. And this was before, Zero Dawn was before I came out, Forbidden West was after I cracked them. But yeah, the whole time I'm like, okay, why do I relate so hard to this game? Anyway, right. Zero Dawn does have a couple, I think Zero Dawn has a non-binary character and Forbidden West has a trans woman who like doesn't really have the language for what she is, which is another problem, I think.
Right.
I think that like it's not realistic that this culture has no idea what a trans woman is and like no way to conceptualize that. But both of these, like you have to like go to a side area and like do a side quest in order to meet these characters.
Right.
And that has two effects. It means that like they're missable, of course.
Of course.
And it also means that it never fleshes them out. Like this is, it's very tokenizing. Like this is the trans woman that you meet. And she doesn't really have any other reason for being in the game. Dragon Age Inquisition also had a transvest character that I think is only inside content as well. You have to like do one of the character's loyalty quests in order to meet him. And like the representation is good. Like one of your dialogue options is just simply, how long have you known? And yeah. Like, it doesn't make a big deal. There's just this casually trans-mass character, but it's also like, make this person front and center.
Mm-hmm.
Not again, like you can go too far in the other direction. You can like, you know, have this person like lead the brigade waving like a Progress Pride flag, but like we need these people to be on the main path.
Right. It's all about just like that representation, yeah. Kind of getting used to that representation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do definitely want to give Horizon a shout out for a tomboy redhead with a strong jawline representation.
Oh yes.
Oh yes.
God. Like,
that is that's a vibe that I vibe with. So
oh my yeah. God, like the like yeah. Twitter men's rights tears.
Oh,
like,
they were so mad.
Oh my God, when Aloy had like some peach fuzz.
Yes. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like telling on themselves that they've never seen a woman IRL, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You've never touched one for, you know, at least. So
that's right. I forgot about that. They all went nuts because that, and I can't remember Abby because I never played Last of Us 2, but there was a big controversy with a character who the Chungus's swore was a man. They were, you know, a woman. I think it was Abby. I don't remember. I never played the games. So I don't know, but it was a big, stupid thing. Like, over it.
You know, if a woman looks like they, you know, she could beat them up, they get scared. So, mm-hmm. You know, they have to, you know.
I've come across that attitude a few times, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Just,
I am not a very feminine woman. I never have been. It's just part of my gender identity is even though I feel fine as a woman, just when I put on makeup or anything like that, I feel like I'm freaking out. It's really weird.
Oh, yeah.
I'm definitely a trans tomboy is how I would describe myself. So
I am very femme. I think I like the needle moved when I like cracked, like the pendulum swung too much in the other direction, but like,
you know, it's all pink and stuff. It's all fun. Like that's the fun part of being like, you know, just kind of exploring your gender identity. What do I like? What don't I like? It's, you have one crack at the earth. You may as well have fun with it.
Yeah. Like I think once like you give yourself permission to ask that question. Like if you can keep asking questions.
Yeah. I find that when I turned 40, there was a certain silence that came over my life that I just adored. Nobody's bothering me about kids anymore. Everyone assumes I'm just a barren desert of a woman. It's like, okay, you can think that if you want.
Oh my God.
I don't give a damn. Just don't ask me about kids anymore. And they don't ask you like, what are you doing with your life? They don't care. You're 40 years old. You can go starve to death for all they care. But it's really great. I love it. I'm not being sarcastic. And it's the same thing with like, you know, I'm getting older. Gender kind of changes a little bit. Like right now I'm going through perimenopause, which is pre-menopause. It's young because my mom was very young as well. And I can just warn people from this angle, because I'm kind of in a bit of a group here. It changes your body and your mind in many interesting ways, terrible, good ways, bad ways. And I didn't hear anything about that growing up. So it's all new to me and everything's so weird and magical in a weird way. And I'm just floating along, I suppose. Everything's just changing. Everything changes. And I realize that now. And that's why I'm just like, I don't care what gender you are. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you change it tomorrow again. It's just none of my business. Be you. Be free. Be happy. That's all I want.
Yeah, I mean, hormonal changes definitely like screw with you. Like, I mean, I have been on HRT, 9 months now? And like, I mean, for me, it was really clarifying, right? Like all of a sudden, like kind of like something kind of got rewired in my brain that like in a way that kind of fixed things. But I can definitely see like the same experience of what your body was kind of forcing you to go through.
Yeah.
Like, you know, kind of it just changes the way the world looks to you.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, actually. Scary, but cool.
Scary, but cool.
I guess we should wrap things up here because I like to keep things short and sweet, but do any of you have any final thoughts about just like queerness in games?
My final thought is, Yoshi P, if you're listening, for the love of Heidelin, stop gender locking things. Stop costumes that look different on men versus women. Just let us wear whatever the hell we want.
Yes, and hats for Vieira.
And hats for Vieira.
Gay hats for Vieira.
I want to see more queer creators in the industry. We have some great ones already. If you want,
but all in the indie scene.
Right. Mm. They're mostly indies. They're mostly like, you know, for every one that gets noticed, there are going to be 99 who have to go back to their day job.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate reality. But, you know, if you're in a position to do hiring at a bigger studio and you want better queer rep in your games, hire some queer people. Like that's such a good point.
And that's so central to getting good queer rep and not just tokenizing queer rep. So thanks for saying that.
Because you're not going to understand the experience, and that's okay. You're not supposed to. So hire some people who do.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure. I agree with that.
And also trans women need jobs.
Yes. Also hire me. Yeah, I would be happy to write for your game. I'll give you my contact info.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
But have we had a AAA game with a like openly queer designer? Like, I'm sure at some point, but we need so much more of that.
Exactly. It's not very loud. You know what I mean? Like,
we have that in the indie space, but like, I don't think we have that in the AAA space. And I think we need that.
I think you're right for sure. And what about you, Lynn?
I think that was my
final thought was hire more queer people. Video games.
I think it's a good, like, because of course it's not just good representation. I firmly believe that like people need jobs and things that make them feel wanted and needed.
Yeah,
and hiring a trans person for a game in any regard is, you know, it's win-win from all sides of the spectrum. So go for it. Hire more queer people and just keep working at that representation. And I think you'll be all right. Ask us for questions. Anytime you have any sort of questions, I'm open, or, you know, I'm here to help. We're all here to help. But that is it for this week's very colorful episode of Retronauts. I apologize for the rambling. I am a little bit tired, but
it's that limbo week between, you know, the holidays and New Year's where it's just everybody's
time.
And I was so wired last night.
Time runs differently in this universe. But thank you so much for listening. You're free to lob comments and criticisms at me. My DMs are open. Thanks especially to my guests who did a great job with today's discussion. And Len, where can we find you? Do you have anything to promote?
I am Till Folkvang on Twitter. That's TILFOLKVANG. And also, like I said, I do a strategy podcast called Three Moves Ahead. That's at 3MA. I do a lot of freelance writing for PC Gamer, IGN, some other sites. You can find it all on my Twitter, along with just various deranged ramblings. So
I like your ramblings on Twitter. I relate to them a lot.
Thank you. Funny. Thank you. Yeah.
And what about you, Lars? Where can we find you?
I am on Twitter for the moment. Let's see if that sticks within the next few months. But I am on Twitter right now at OrkyBash, OrkyBash. And again, if you know me from Overclocked, that is still me.
The music never changes.
Yep.
And again, I am Nadia Oxford of the Axe of the Blood God RPG podcast, as well as this here Retronauts Rodeo. Support Retronauts at patreon.com/retronauts. If you pledge at the $3 level, you can receive early access to weekly episodes. Supporting us at the $5 level gets you episodes a week early, as well as 2 exclusive episodes a month. And support us at the magic number 64 for the opportunity to set a topic for Retronauts once every 6 months. As of this recording, there are 2 spots left, so go and grab that if you can. And you can also support Axe of the Blood God at patreon.com/BloodGodPod. I'd appreciate that very much. And so would my host, Kat, and my co-host, Eric, and all of our fun friends at the community. But until next time, just be fabulous.